rejoining you here on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Travis Ryer alongside my second helping co-host and, more importantly, my great friend, Brent Beard. Let's talk some Southeastern Conference football late night on a Thursday night. Brent, a defining weekend. I know it sounds like we say that every week as it relates to the Southeastern Conference, but you've got especially three road favorites with a lot on the line this weekend in Alabama, Texas A&M, and then also the Ole Miss Rebels.
That's right. Yeah, and anything can happen in these games, very important games, allow for the contenders. Obviously, Texas got one with Kentucky, then A&M, A&M with Auburn, and then Texas, Georgia with UMass and Georgia Tech. They may have the easiest road, although Tech can cause them some problems. Tennessee, UTEP, and Vandy, and Bama, Oklahoma, and Auburn, and Ole Miss, Florida, and Mississippi State. So only two games, but there's a lot to be decided, right?
A lot to be decided and still a lot of football. I said this earlier today. I was on a radio show in Huntsville with Drew DeArmond and Scott Thiessen. It's just two weekends left of the regular season, but in some ways it feels like a whole other season might unfold right before us in these next couple of Saturdays. But Brent, let's work through Saturday's slate in the league where it just means more, of course. And we'll start with that matchup. The Ole Miss Rebels riding a high right now, ranked ninth in the latest college football playoff rankings, travel to a trending Florida program. I don't know if it's so much that Florida's trending for the remainder of this season, but in terms of if it ended today, what we would be thinking about this Florida team heading into 2025 with DJ Lagway, with recruiting also moving in a positive direction. Whatever you thought about Scott Strickland's sort of vague tweet a couple of weeks ago, since that went out, it feels like Florida has been moving in a very positive direction. That being said, Ole Miss is one of those road favorites we talked about for this weekend. My concern for the Gators this week is that Ole Miss is playing really well and getting healthier at the same time, right?
Well, my understanding is, help me on this, that Trey Harris is back. Very well, maybe the best receiver in the league. And he is a load to try to defend in so many ways. But I've told folks all week long, Trav, my concern with Florida is not even the offense. It's the Ole Miss defense that is playing really well at this point. I mean, they're 18-1 when they score at least 21. And I could see that certainly happening. So Pete Golding has done a nice job. Ole Miss, who would have thought this a few years ago with Lane, first in the league in team sacks and in rushing defense, allowing only 80 yards a game. So Chino, who's made an appearance here, our
show mascot.
That's right. Is weighing in on the game. Good point on that you mentioned a minute ago. And I won't go into this, but recruiting for Florida has ramped up considerably. Tramell Jones flipped from FSU to Florida, a quarterback. Stephen Shivers, who is 6'5", about 350, is a defensive lineman who was committed to Georgia in his flip. Evan Noel, a kicker who has flipped. And Jamie French, who you're aware of, like me, here in Jacksonville, wide receiver at Mandarin because of the aforementioned DJ Lagway has caused a lot of interest for French. And again, the thing that really kind of bodes well, not only is this team playing well, they're really playing well defensively. And Trav, when we repeat that we did the other day, seven sacks against LSU had a lot to do with how that game came out.
Yeah, I mean, it just goes to show, too, back to the recruiting part of this, star power at the quarterback position is everything. Now, there is a lot of sizzle around DJ Lagway. And I can think of maybe a few instances where non-quarterbacks had that sort of impact, that cool factor in terms of a team's recruiting prowess. Julio Jones was kind of that guy for Alabama back in 2008, 2009. But between then and now, there's few and far between as far as non-quarterbacks. So if you got the quarterback right, it impacts your program at a number of levels. You said it too, though, this matchup in some previous years, I would have thought about, wow, look at this Florida run game. It's very much moving in the right direction. A lot of years Ole Miss isn't built in a way defensively in the front seven to deal well with that. But this is the exception with this Ole Miss front seven and really this defense in general. So if you're thinking it's going to be Johnson and Ball and, you know, Lagway taking some shots every once in a while, I think Ole Miss can turn this into a game where it has to be a lot of DJ Lagway and those receivers.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, Trav, Lagway can really give them something when he can run. And we really don't know yet, do we, as far as what he can do as far as testing that that hamstring. Now, he might get a couple of key first downs if he can run kind of unimpeded with that. But that still is an issue. And I'm guessing the Gator coaching staff have cautioned him on that.
Yeah, it felt like against LSU it would have been helpful because we know LSU has really struggled against quarterback runs, but that defense in general isn't what Ole Miss's is.
No.
So it almost feels like you would really like to have DJ Lagway available, certainly more so as a runner this week than he was last week when he was essentially unavailable. But that'll be an interesting part of this to see if he's maybe continued to progress with that hamstring to a point where he can give them something. Yes. With his wheels, even if it's sort of extending plays to throw the football, because his pass rush, as you pointed out, can really get after the quarterback this year under Pete Golding. That is, of course, the noon game on ABC with the Florida Gators and the Ole Miss Rebels coming up at 12:45 Eastern on Saturday. Georgia welcomes the boys from Amherst. UMass going to make the trip down to Athens. Georgia coming off, of course, the huge win over the Tennessee Vols. Brent, was that enough, though, to kind of secure this Georgia team a place in the college football playoff? Or is there just, as we talked about earlier, just so much more that can happen here in the next couple of 3 weeks?
Yeah, I think there is. And they'll easily dispatch of UMass, but they've got a Georgia Tech team that we both know. That Brent Key can coach up and that they can certainly be ready. Tech still running that two quarterback system with the Philo kid throwing the ball.
Playing NC State tonight, right?
Yeah, that's right. And Haynes King being able to run a bit. But Georgia certainly is back on track. A lot of consternation about the college football rankings. We still need to give that a little bit of time. Now we don't talk about UMass much, Trav. How often does this happen? UMass fires Coach Don Brown, renowned defensive coordinator with Michigan, that just didn't quite work. Frankly, they were 6-28 at this point. So I wonder how often that's happened. The team comes to Athens the same week they fire their coach.
Yeah, that's a rough scenario. But for Georgia, you want to see continued progress, especially on the offensive side of the ball. You want to see Carson Beck and those receivers continue to click. You want to see the two or three tight ends continue to be a big part of this thing. I'm not sure about Trevor Etienne, I guess, for this game, but it's a opportunity for Nate Frazier and some of the other running backs to continue to do good things. I really don't have many questions about the Georgia defense as of this moment, but offensively, I still need to see more. And I need to see Beck throw for 450 against UMass, but you want to see some carryover, some crispness, some well-executed stuff from Mike Bobo for this team as it looks ahead to Georgia Tech and what could be, you know, a win you're in scenario.
Absolutely.
For Georgia in a couple Saturdays there in Athens. Let's talk about 1 p.m. Eastern on Saturday from Knoxville. The Vols return to the calm confines of Neyland Stadium after that road trip to Athens. UTEP comes to town. Scotty Waldron in his first season with the Miners. The Miners have struggled in year one under Scotty, but couple wins here of late. That being said, this should be a get-right situation for the Tennessee Vols and an opportunity to continue to perhaps get some guys healthy. You know, this has been a beat-up Tennessee team, as has been the case for a lot of the teams in the SEC.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. UTEP's allowed more than 200 yards rushing 5 times, so Dylan Sampson and the Tennessee running backs and that offensive line will look forward to that. But Trev, to your point about Carson Beck, I say the same thing with Nico at quarterback. Don't you want to see more out of him too, as far as development? Because frankly, and look, they brought him along slowly. He hasn't had to throw 50 passes necessarily because of their defense and running game. But this might be a really good chance for him as far as work on timing, to work on some routes maybe he normally doesn't throw, and just to see how he does.
It is. I think this is a little bit of a psyche game for the Tennessee defense. Not that it should be challenged to the hilt by the UTEP offense, but I think the ego maybe took a little bit of a bruise in that performance down the stretch, especially at Georgia. So mentally, I think for Tennessee, a chance to kind of get where it wants to be before it goes to Nashville. A game that certainly is going to have our attention on that final weekend with Diego and the Commodores set to host the Volunteers in a couple of weeks. And with that, we move to 3:30 on Texas, Kentucky. Boy, doesn't get any easier for the Wildcats. No. They travel to number 3, Texas. That's a 3:30 Eastern game on ABC Saturday. I guess for Texas right now, similar to Georgia, although and Tennessee, although it's still league play, and you got to be careful because we've seen Kentucky go into Oxford. That was much earlier in the season and get a win. But, you know, in some ways it just feels like Texas still trying to get there, maybe offensively. Yeah. Won the game at Arkansas last week, 20-10. But I'm sure by Steve Sarkisian standards, there's better offense, there's better football that side of the ball can produce for the Longhorns here in the near future.
Yeah, they were pretty lethargic in a lot of ways against Arkansas. Now, Quinn Ewers kind of is hot and cold, but he still gets the job done. And again, what we don't forget, that was a 13-10 game against Arkansas early in the fourth quarter. Yep. No, I'm with you. I think that's what they need to be able to do is make some improvement on that offense. That the defense is about lethal, frankly. I mean, they kept Arkansas on their heels the whole game, held them to about 230 yards. You mentioned this a minute ago. This is Kentucky's fourth game against a top 10 team. Lord, they beat Ole Miss, lost to Georgia, lost to Tennessee. Went back in the archives a little bit for this, Trav. The last time these two teams played, 1951, and the Kentucky coach at that point won Paul Bear Bryant back in 1951. That was a 7-6 game at that point. So, I would have never thought this. My understanding is Kentucky's played like 1,350 something games in their program history, and not a single one of them has been west of Austin, Texas.
So, I saw that earlier this week. That's crazy.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Did you believe that, man alive? Now I do want to throw this in here real quick. Jamon Dumas Johnson, J.J. Weaver, Deion Walker, and Maxwell Harrison, all near 100% healthy. Trav, that will help them immensely.
Yeah, you know, ideally, Kentucky could kind of get this into the kind of game Arkansas got last week where it never really felt like Texas mm-hmm. was in danger. But the bottom line is, in the fourth quarter, Arkansas had an opportunity. The problem for Kentucky, I think, is that you're on the road. And even if you're in that situation, can Brock Vandegrift, can that offense get over the hump against this Texas defense? That's the beauty of this Texas team to this point. Even with Quinn Ewers injured earlier in the season, even without the offense performing at perhaps a consistently high level, this Texas defense has been really, really good. And I think that in and of itself should be enough, if it comes down to it, to get the Longhorns past the Wildcats. And then we really have to wonder about Kentucky as a bowl team.
Once again, under
Mark Stoops, looking ahead to Louisville in the regular season's final weekend. So Wofford going to travel. The Terriers going to travel to Columbia to take their shot. This is crazy to say in late November. The 18th ranked South Carolina Gamecocks, who should get their eighth win on Saturday, set themselves up for potentially nine wins before they get the bowl play. Just an incredible job by Shane Beamer and that staff, given everything that we saw or didn't see from this team early in the season.
They are 5-0 against Wofford. I know Wofford in the past ran kind of a wishbone, I believe, and gave them some issues, but they were still able to win. We look for the continued maturity for Lenore Sellers. Listen, you can make an argument that Lenore Sellers in the last, month has probably improved as much as almost anybody in the league.
If there was a most improved player in the league award, just like you said, not even from the start of the season, just since about mid-October even, it would have to be Lenore Sellers, I would think.
Absolutely. And that defense, obviously, has just been freakishly good. That they're able to hang their hand on that. There's talk about South Carolina coming back to the Gator Bowl. That they were down here not too long ago playing Notre Dame. So that would be helpful for them. But it's just, listen, this would be another feel-good game. Travel, they'll be able to concentrate on Wofford, knowing those Clemson Tigers are on the horizon.
Yeah, that's the thing. We talk about mindset games, maturity games, character games, whatever you want to call them. I think that's as much of the challenge or the biggest challenge for Shane Beamer in South Carolina this week. Can they hold their water, so to speak, with Clemson out on the not-too-distant horizon? I think they'll be just fine. You just don't want to get some of your key people hurt.
Exactly.
Starting with Sellers, Rocket Sanders, and some of those important pieces, certainly those edge defenders that South Carolina has dominated with at times so far this season. The Arkansas Razorbacks also at 4 p.m. Eastern on Saturday. Brent, going to host the Bulldogs of Louisiana Tech. I've circled this game for a while now here on the program because
you have.
Out in the distance, you kind of look at this game as, okay, this is what gets Pittman. This is what gets Arkansas to six wins in a bowl game. And then Louisiana Tech beats Western Kentucky on the road last week.
I
start to panic
a
little bit. But, you still have Missouri in the final Saturday of the regular season for Arkansas. But, boy, this really – you say Louisiana Tech and people kind of maybe chuckle at it. This feels like one of the top three biggest games.
Yeah, it really does.
Sam Pittman error at Arkansas. Because if you lose this game and you lose to Missouri and you finish 5-7, I don't care about buyout numbers. I don't care about Bobby Petrino being the offensive coordinator. That's a really, really tough sell in terms of running that back with Pittman in 2025.
Yeah, it really would. I agree with that. And now some really good news for them. Braylon Russell, who has kind of disappeared, frankly, is back. He had some kind of an injury. JaQuindon Jackson, both these guys have kind of taken turns being hurt, but they're both healthy, and that's going to be a big help. I tell you, a guy you mentioned a few weeks ago that deserves a little bit more love than he's gotten is their receiver, Andrew Armstrong.
Yeah, he's a good player.
Trav leads the league in both receiving, 103 yards per game, and receptions per game with six.
He'll play in the league. I'm not saying I'm not saying he's CD Lamb. I'm just saying I see some similarities there in his game compared to the former OU Sooner and current Dallas Cowboy. That's all I'm saying, Brent.
Yeah, that's all fair. All right. Yeah, yeah. And Tex only scored 26 offensive touchdowns, but you're right about this. And at some point, don't games like – if you're Arkansas, games like this are what almost more mindset games than they are anything else, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And you just – you know, we've seen it in the past with teams like Georgia and now Texas under Sark and Alabama previously under Nick Saban. They can beat you twice.
That's right.
You know, I know a lot of people make a big deal out of scheduling and, well, who's got their bye weeks before Alabama or Georgia? I've always said I'd rather have my bye week after Georgia or Alabama.
Right.
That's probably when I'm going to need it more.
Oh, yeah. No
doubt. So I think that's what we'll find out about Arkansas. And Arkansas's had some cringy moments in games like this already this season. The UAB game earlier in the season didn't look good for a while in Fayetteville. So need to come out early, take care of business, and turn this into more of a celebratory night.
Yes. Yes.
In Fayetteville than a geez, we got by, you know, by a fingernail.
Yeah.
And now we still got to go to Missouri next weekend. So interesting for Arkansas on Saturday afternoon. That's SEC Network Plus at 4 Eastern, Tech and the Hogs. Hey, let's get into primetime. In another one of those, I've been talking about this all week here on the channel, these road favorites that are in similar spots, college football playoff candidates, still in the mix for the Southeastern Conference championship game, and they're all on the road.
Yep,
talked about Ole Miss at Florida earlier on the program, and this one. We're going to talk about Alabama and Oklahoma coming up here in just a little bit too. But number 15, Texas A&M at Auburn. Yeah. And whereas you would look at this game maybe on paper and think, boy, A&M's probably a pretty healthy favorite. It's just 2.5 points.
Yeah, really?
Just 2.5. And with Auburn, it's just trust issues at this point.
Yeah, I agree.
Because we talked about it. We've seen Auburn play at a pretty high level at Kentucky, and it really didn't translate into anything else beyond that. And then coming off that impressive offensive performance against ULM last week, do you put a lot of stock in that, Brent, going into this game? Does it change the way maybe that you look at this matchup? Where are you at on the Aggies and the Tigers?
One thing that was a bit disturbing, I know it was a Freudian slip when Mike Elko was asked about his team this week, our focus is single-handedly on Texas. Auburn. hey, did you get a good laugh out of that? Like I did?
And especially if it involves Auburn.
Yeah.
That feels like that's the kiss of death.
Oh, it does.
And somebody told Mike the crazy stuff that has happened in Germany in late November.
He better know it.
In the past, not just to Alabama either. You know, there's crazy stuff happens in that stadium. You just worry that maybe Mike is already
kind of
etched in stone the fate of his team now with that.
Well, and I've got a lot of questions with this. And number one, how involved are these receivers going to be? Kim Coleman, as we talked earlier in the week, 8 catches for 100 yards in the win over Louisiana Monroe. But at the same time, Trav, can we trust Hugh to be able to run the ball with Jarquez Hunter, or is he going to get caught up in this? And the need to be able to throw the ball.
Is he going to be patient?
Yeah,
that's my question for Hugh, because I won't be surprised if early on Saturday night Auburn can't really run Jarquez Hunter,
right?
Because I mean, we're talking about A&M. You know, on the other side, you got to take that into account. And will Hugh just run it up in there a couple of times, maybe have his best runs dialed up on the script?
Yeah.
They don't go for much, and now it's Peyton Thorne show. And I do think Peyton Thorne, though, has to be a factor with the ball in his hands other than a passer.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying he has to be Cam Newton-like, but we've seen what happens to quarterbacks against Texas A&M if they can't really
right.
navigate or yeah. move that well. Garrett Nussmeier ultimately fell victim to that. And so that's it for me with Hugh as much as anything. If the first two or three runs don't go well, will he keep going there?
Which I agree. Well, and my other two questions are, can Auburn blocks Nick Skirt and Shamir Stewart, Cassius yeah. Howell?
And that's why Hugh may not be patient.
Yeah, it really might be. But I come back to my final question here, Trav, and I'm not making this a gambling thing, but you and I both know the man is setting this at 2.5. Now, why is this spread that low? That's my big question for this game.
Well, I guess, you know, the last time we saw A&M go on the road, what happened?
Yeah, true.
I mean, went to South Carolina and kind of got worked.
Yeah, they did.
On the road, didn't they? So, you know, some teams are different and matchups are different every week. So I think if I were going to rank those three teams that we talked about this week, Ole Miss, Alabama, Texas A&M, in terms of likelihood of having a real problem Saturday night, I would have A&M at the top of that list. And that kind of does line up with Vegas. But we'll see if Marcel Reed, you know, that run game without Le'Veon Moss. You know, I think A&M's defense is good enough to kind of carry them.
I agree.
In this game potentially, but how much of that momentum is real?
Yeah.
From ULM for Peyton Thorne, for Hunter, for Cam Coleman, you know, in that receiving core. We're going to find out at 7:30 Eastern on Saturday night on ESPN. Also at 7:30 Eastern on Saturday night, one of those other teams going on the road as a favorite, with everything on the line where the college football playoff and the SEC championship game is concerned, is seventh-ranked Alabama headed to Norman to take on an Oklahoma team that has certainly struggled this year. You look at Oklahoma, Brent, in just about every offensive category, Sooners at or near the bottom of the rankings in the Southeastern Conference.
Right.
It's just crazy to me that we're in late November of Oklahoma's inaugural season in the SEC, and the Sooners still don't have a conference home win.
Yeah.
I mean, if they lose this game, they're going to go their first year in the SEC 0-3 at home in conference play.
Yeah, that's amazing. It really is. But there, you know, there's some things here that have really contributed to that. This is going to be Oklahoma's, to get this, Trav, 10 different offensive line starting lineup. They've had 10 different ones.
Yeah.
And we said at the beginning of the year, they've got to replace all of them. And the other thing that really sticks out against SEC competition, they are averaging 15 points a game. And that is it.
Last in the
SEC. Yeah, yes.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's a and I've heard two Oklahoma beat writers this week that they describe Oklahoma's chances, and they said I'll give you an honest appraisal, and they said Oklahoma's defense will keep them in it for a while, but you can look toward the fact that at some point as you get into the third and fourth quarter, they both said Oklahoma basically falls apart. So, and that's pretty, and for guys who covered on a weekly basis, that's a very interesting description.
That is, but it's reality. I mean, that's pretty much the truth for Oklahoma football this season. OU in its last three SEC games has turned the ball over 8 times.
Wow.
You know, so that's not a winning formula at all in this league. Now for Alabama, everything seems to be trending in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a rejuvenated offense, run game seems to be a refreshed, at least Jalen Milroe in that regard, but Oklahoma defensively can make it tough on you.
They can
do what you want to do. Oklahoma under Brent Venables defense, it's kind of like a good basketball defense. They find your one strength and they kind of take it away and make you beat them another way.
Yeah.
And so I'm going into this game not expecting Jalen Milroe to average 13 yards per carry or something crazy like that. Mm-hmm. We saw in Baton Rouge a couple of weeks ago. Danny Stutzman, those safeties for Oklahoma, they can do some things to sort of limit you in that regard. That's where some of these other guys have to step up though, for Alabama offensively. And maybe it's not the obvious. Maybe it's not Ryan Williams, Jermaine Bernard, or those running backs. Maybe it's a C.J. Dupree or Robbie Oots. Mm-hmm. We saw them more involved last week.
Oh yeah.
Some of that was by design. I like to think they were being rewarded for the dirty work that they've done throughout this season. But it could be that Alabama really needs to call on those guys this week offensively.
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you one thing. You made a reference to this early in the year. It is, what would Kalen DeBoer, who, by the way, if he wins this game, will have the best record for any first-year Alabama coach, including Nick Saban. But the thing you mentioned about what would he do to really form his identity with this team, and I'm going to say, frankly, that he may not even be on offense. The defense has forced 24 turnovers this year. Three last week, and Trapp, to me, that's the biggest improvement maybe that we have seen on this team from top to bottom. I mean, they're plus 13 is fourth best in Division I, much less in the SEC. So is that a fair assessment that as this defense grew up, so did this football team?
It's been hand in hand. I don't think there's any doubt about it. And that's sort of, at least going into this game, Saturday night, you feel like, hey, if it comes down to it, we got to kind of retro ball this thing.
Yeah.
Kicking game and defense could be enough for Alabama to get the job done. If that Oklahoma defense does keep the Sooners in the game well into the second half, this Oklahoma offense is not good. And the situation at wide receiver has not remedied it itself in terms of the injuries. It doesn't look like that's going to be the case again this week. In fact, Oklahoma looks to have some injuries even at the running back position now. So, the Alabama defense has a great opportunity. I think it's actually more on the Alabama defense.
Yeah, it may very well be.
Because
yes.
The matchup's better for them.
Yeah,
it should be a situation, unless the offense just puts them in a really bad spot a couple of times, and they should be able to dictate in terms of this game to this Oklahoma team. That's not going to be easy playing at home. No. I think we all expect a proud Oklahoma team on a senior night looking for its first home win as an SEC member to make anything but easy. And this is still Alabama. You're still going to get OU's very best, even if OU was 2-8 going into this game. That would be the case. So, for Alabama, I think you hit on it. It's win turnover margin. Don't revert back to the penalty issues from Tennessee. Kind of follow that blueprint as best you can from the LSU game, understanding it's not going to be as easy offensively, especially on the ground, as it was in Baton Rouge. But, look, again, if Oklahoma's intent on loading up against Jalen and more so that run game, what we haven't seen as much lately, and mostly because Alabama hasn't needed it also, is the vertical passing game.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And just missed to Caleb Odom last week in the Mercer game.
Robbie Oots.
Hit Robbie Oots on one. But as far as the outside guys go, just missed Ryan Williams on one in Baton Rouge. This could be a point where that resurfaces for the Crimson Tide. Hey, let's talk about a couple of 6-4 teams. Mm-hmm. It's funny. Perception can be wildly different about a 6-4 record. Can it, Brent?
Yes.
Vanderbilt is over the moon.
Yeah, really.
To be 6-4 in bowl bound. Mm-hmm. LSU, after its latest loss, its third straight loss now, sits at 6-4. You don't get the sense it's as warm and fuzzy about that 6-4 mark under Brian Kelly. And then I also see where, LSU lost a huge quarterback commitment.
They sure did. The Underwood kid went to Michigan.
Bryce Underwood flips from LSU to home state Michigan. Crazy NIL numbers being thrown around in that one.
Yeah.
So it's been a pretty unforgettable few weeks for Brian Kelly in Baton Rouge. And this is a Vanderbilt team. You get the sense, looks at this and goes, hey, let us get some of that.
If
this is an LSU team sort of with feeling down about things, this isn't a good place to face Vanderbilt, even at home.
Trev, this thing that sticks out to me, Marcel Reed ran for 62 yards and 3 touchdowns on LSU. Jalen Milroe, 185 and 4 scores. Also, can our favorite player in Diego, could he put up some numbers like that, I wonder?
Yeah, they may spell Diego D-E-I-G-E-A-U-X after this game.
Yeah.
We'll have to see.
Yeah.
I don't know. Here's the thing about Diego is he's not as sudden as a runner. But the thing about Diego is you have to deal with him snap in and snap out. He doesn't take a snap off.
No, I mean, absolutely not.
So, you know, the Vanderbilt offense has really trended downward throughout the season. When you look at the statistics for the Southeastern Conference at this point, it doesn't really blow you away. But it seems like whenever he's needed to be that guy, he has more than delivered. And, you know, I think Vanderbilt defensively can hang in there pretty good Saturday night. So, you know, obviously LSU is still the more talented team. Still got some work to do as far as roster is concerned. But, boy, some of the sideline stuff we saw, some of the interaction that we saw with LSU and Brian Kelly and some of the LSU players last Saturday night in Gainesville, that's my biggest concern for LSU going into this game as much as anything else.
Yeah. Now, one thing that might help them, well, Garrett Dellinger, I think, is supposed to be back.
Okay.
On the offensive line.
So that is big because they've been awful the interior. I mean, their tackles catch some heat for some of that, but more so than anything, those interior guys have been bad.
Well, you wonder if Kelly and some of these guys like Chris Hilton sat down and Kyron Lacy yelling at Kelly too. Now, this first time Kelly, in fairness, and he's done well, at least with double-digit seasons. First time he hadn't had a double-digit season, frankly, in years. So, but I'm with you. I mean, if they lose this game, and look, Kelly's got a buyout of about, what is it, 50 to 60 million?
Yeah.
He's not going anywhere anytime soon. But Trev, it's the point that we're making here is, where does this go as far as players hitting the portal? And the point you made a few minutes ago about Underwood, with signing day less than 2 weeks away, you don't need to start losing people if you're LSU.
Yeah, this sort of finish to the season upset the stomachs of a lot of LSU fans, which, considering the fare that is consumed in the state of Louisiana, that's probably hard to do.
Yeah.
Pretty resilient gastronomically, a lot of folks in Louisiana are.
Yeah.
But still upset. But Underwood was kind of the Tums, right?
Yes.
That was settling that, calming that down. Now you don't have your Tums.
No.
And you still got the upset stomach. And it can become more upset if Diego and the Doors go into Baton Rouge this weekend and get the job done. Well, Brent, there you go. There's a full rundown of Saturday's action in the Southeastern Conference. You got anything else for us before we get out of here?
Yeah, I you know, the Trev, I still want to give, if there is a resilient player of the year, I still want to give that to Brady Cook. He's come back from wrist and ankle injuries, threw for 237, even though South Carolina was able to pull out the win at that point. And I kind of wonder where they're going to be in the offseason. I mean, Drake has been, mentioned for a few jobs. He certainly got the, as we've talked many times, raising the extension a couple of years ago. I know Mississippi State, who they're playing this week, is got a long way to go. But I have some concern for Missouri, kind of like I do LSU, Trav, is how do they, a team that some people thought may even be going to the playoffs, how do they survive the rest of the year and get into the offseason?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question, and it's a big game for Mississippi State, too,
it is.
Because if you're going to win a conference game in year one under Jeff Lebby, and we can talk about, you know, Van Buren stepping forward as a freshman quarterback, some of the positives that we've seen this season with Lebby and Starkville, you still need to have that moment, that game, yes, with your team. And if it doesn't happen this week, I don't think it's happening in the Egg Bowl. No. Against Ole Miss. So, Missouri, to me, I said it earlier in the week, I was really impressed with the way they showed the resilience to come back. They showed you that if their guys are healthy, you know, they can still get it done with Brady Cook and Nate Noel and those receivers. But, I think the grass is always greener. It's not just limited to NIL or transfer portal these days.
No.
You kind of hope Eli understands he's in a pretty good situation.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know, like most coaches, he wants to be in a situation where he can compete at the highest level on a consistent basis. So you're always going to see guys take their shot if those jobs present themselves. But as we sit here right now, it's hard to envision a better situation for Eli Drinkwitz. Now, who knows what might open up
after
a couple weeks. There's jobs still out there, not even within the SEC. There might be some Big Ten opportunities that could work out towards maybe a guy like that. So we'll see. But no, you don't need to lose in Starkville Saturday night. For sure, that's the type of loss that could start some things in motion.
Yeah, it really can. And as we go out here outside the SEC. We won't go into great detail here, but BYU, Arizona State, they play two ranked teams. Folks may not realize that. Still think that what Summerall has done at Tulane is kind of coach of the year stuff in a lot of ways. We had a retirement for one Jim McElwain, who used to be at Florida.
All that.
And Trav, the big one, obviously. Kirk Cignetti has done an amazing job with this Indiana team, and they've got to prove it with Ohio State. Listen, I really felt for Seth McLaughlin.
Yeah, that's right.
His reappearance. The Ohio State center, who is at Alabama, a torn Achilles. Trav, if you tear your Achilles almost in December, when can you come back from that?
You know, that's one of those things they've expedited, kind of like ACLs, maybe not to the extent of the ACL, but it's become surprising how quickly guys have acted. It used to be at least a year.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You
know, 15 years ago, it was a year, I would say, pretty comfortably.
Sure.
Then in the last 10 to 12 years, it seems like progressively we've seen guys get back quicker. Mm-hmm. From that kind of injury, maybe it's not as difficult on an offensive lineman. Maybe it is because you're trying to, you know, you're working from the ground up, and the power and explosiveness and those type of things. But yeah, it's tough for Ohio State because now they're down their left tackle and their
center. Yeah.
It's a very interesting weekend just around college football in general. No doubt about that.
Trav, appreciate it and enjoyed it much. And give your YouTube channel a plug. And maybe do we have a late word from Pops going into the weekend?
Yeah, we got to check in on Pops. But Tex Tider has a last word. He says, thanks, guys. Great stuff as always, Tex. We always appreciate you being here. And he also says, later, Chino. Tex Tider, president of the Chino.
That's right.
Fan club. So absolutely. If you haven't subscribed to Ryer on YouTube as of yet, we hope you'll go ahead and hit that subscribe button right now. You see that notification bell right there as well. Hit that. That way you're alerted to all of our content as it drops right here on Ryer on YouTube. Thumbs up. A like is always greatly appreciated as well. And with that, for Brent Beard, I'm Travis Ryer. Thanking you once again for joining us right here on Second Helping. Until next time, so long, everybody.